large hole in the wall.
No. If what I have heard is correct, I believe they are afraid.
Afraid? Of what? They have us outnumbered 10 to 1.
They are not afraid of you and me. They are afraid of this place. In the before times, Trishad was known as an important religious center. A variety of worshippers converged here for sacred rites, and from them the Samitans' own beliefs sprang up. They consider this place untouchable. Holy ground.
Are you saying that they're superstitious? As long as we're here, they won't come in after us?
Yes, but do not forget. They are the sworn enemy of the Tusuk. We will not be allowed to leave alive. They will be waiting for us.
We'll worry about that when the time comes. Mark turned his back on the shrill yells of the Samitin. Let's go find the shaman. Chapter 39. Trisad's dusty main street was desolate. The only sign of life was a filthy beggar with a gray beard that almost touched the ground. He sat in rags near one of the fallen-down houses, and when they walked by, he pleaded for scraps of food. Mark peered into the dark opening of one of the buildings. Several large berbas, rat creatures, scurried across the floor. Up the street, a door slammed. A small breeze kicked up a red whirlwind that blew itself out against one of the ancient, weather-beaten walls. A thin woman darted across the road in front of them, balancing a basket on her head. Mark couldn't help noticing a wide scar on her face that ran from her left eyebrow down to her chin.
"Friendly place," Mark said.
"I told you, Kekon. Trisad is now a refuge for outlaws and others who want to remain hidden. People here keep to themselves, and they do not like outsiders. Come. I know a man who will give us food and drink. When the time is right, I will ask him about the shaman."
Sarbo turned a corner and stepped into a yard littered with bones and broken pottery. A furry animal on a short chain, a cross between a dog and an alligator, snarled at Mark's beast.
"Wait here, Kekon. I will see if we are welcome."
Sarbo strode into the shadows. Mark watched him walk down a set of dirt steps and heard him knock vigorously on a door.
"Hello to the short man," he shouted. "Out here in the hot sun you have Sarbo the warrior."
There was no answer. Mark led his beast to the edge of the steps to get a better look. Sarbo shrugged and then knocked again.
"Short man, I come with a friend. We require food and shelter for the night. Dare you turn us away?"
The door creaked open less than an inch. A deep voice boomed out.
"Sarbo, is it really you? Open the door, you old fool, before I break it down around your ears."
"It must be you. Only Sarbo would be brash enough to threaten Trisad's greatest fighting man."
The door swung open, and a portly man with a shaved head and a barrel chest stepped out. He threw his arms around Sarbo, pounded on his back, and then stepped away, grinning.
"I heard you were killed in Rahaz raid, you son of a Garka snake."
"Lies, all lies," Sarbo said, laughing. "Like the one about you being a great fighting man."
"Who is your companion?"
Short man nodded toward Mark.
"I have not seen his kind before. Strange-looking sort. Never mind about his looks. He is a true friend, brave of heart, and not too bad in a fight, either. We need a place to stay tonight. Will you take us?"
The short man yelled into the house.
"Yonk, get out here. Take their mount and see that it is well taken care of."
A scrawny boy, 9 or 10 years old, with smudges of dirt on his face, awkwardly rushed up the steps. He took the reins from Mark and led the beast away.
"Come inside, my old friend. There is plenty of rodent soup on the fire."
Short man led the way down more steps into a musty cellar. There were no windows in the underground room. Light came from a pot of burning oil hanging in the corner from a small round adobe fireplace. Rugs were strewn about on the floor to serve as furniture. Sarbo sat down on one and Mark did the same. Short man lifted the lid off a tall pot and pulled out a gourd dipper full of lukewarm water. He handed it to Sarbo, waited until he had drunk his fill, then offered some to Mark. There was something about this loud man Mark didn't like. He couldn't quite put his finger on it, but he definitely felt uneasy about him. The boy called Yonk timidly slunk back into the room and sat down in a dark corner. Short man glared at him.
Do not sit, ignorant dung! Get our guests some food. Can't you see they have come a long way and are extremely hungry?
The boy went to the pot hanging over the fire. He scooped some stew into two wooden bowls and handed one to Sarbo. He turned to hand the other one to Mark. When he did, some of it slopped over the edge and landed on Mark's foot.
Fool! Short man bellowed.
He raised his hand to strike the boy, but Mark jumped between them. There is no harm done, Mark said quietly, his hand on the hilt of his sword. It was an accident. Do not tire yourself by beating the slave on my account. Yonk's eyes were wide with fear. Silence filled the room. Finally, Short Man stepped back.
You are right, Sarbo. Your strange-looking friend is very brave. Either that or very foolish.
He is young. Sarbo dismissed the incident with a wave of his hand. Let us talk of other things.
Yes, Short Man sat down. Let us discuss why you have come to this forsaken desert. Surely it is not just to see an old friend.
Ha! Sarbo gulped a swallow of the hot stew.
If you think that, then the heat has finally addled your brains. Now, we are looking for someone. We have come to see a shaman who has been residing in Treeside.
Shaman?
Short Man slapped his knee.
That is a very funny joke.
Mark started to speak, but Sarbo held his hand up in warning and continued.
We were told that there was a shaman here who had knowledge of strange powers. One who had seen some extraordinary things and could give us some information we are seeking.
I don't know who told you this, my friend.
Short Man was still chuckling.
But they have made fools of you. You came all this way for nothing. There is no shaman here now, and there never has been.
Perhaps he is not a shaman, Mark said. It is possible that we heard wrong. Perhaps there is someone here who used to be a medicine man. Someone who knows about the before time?
Psh! Who cares about that?
Short Man leaned forward.
Now, tell me why you are really here, Sarbo. Are you on the run? Scouting ahead for a raid? If the booty is good, I might be persuaded to go along.
Sarbo hesitated briefly.
I knew I would not be able to fool you, Short Man.
He set his bowl on the dirt floor.
The fact is, we were doing some scouting and ran into the Samatin. I lost my beast, and we came here to see if I could pick up another.
Short Man rubbed his thick hands together.
A trade? What do you have?
We will talk about it in the morning, my friend. Now I am very tired. When we have rested, we will start the bargaining.
Of course. What was I thinking? Yonk, show our guests to the stables. They will get a good night's sleep, and then...
Short Man opened the door.
Tomorrow, we will bargain.
Chapter 40 Sir, wake up! Mark felt someone gently shaking his shoulder. His eyes flew open. Yonk was kneeling next to him. The boy put his fingers to his lips and motioned for Mark to follow him outside. It was still dark, and Mark had a hard time keeping up with the boy. Yonk led him through a narrow alley and into an abandoned storehouse. Inside, Yonk lit a small torch.
You are in much danger, sir. I could easily lose my life for telling you this.
Then why are you telling me?
Because you stood up to him. No one has ever done that. You must be very brave.
Why am I in danger?
Everyone in Treeside knew you were coming. There has been a reward offered for your capture. Short Man hopes to keep you here long enough to collect it.
Mark scratched his head.
A reward? Why would anybody put out a reward for me? That I do not know, but if you stay here, you will regret it. Take your friend and go back to your village at once.
Yonk blew out the torch and started for the door. Mark grabbed his arm.
Wait. Tell me. Is it true that there is no shaman living in Trisad?
Short man did not lie. There is no one like that here.
But there is someone who speaks about the before time. He is very old, and they say he has lost his mind. I doubt you could understand anything he says.
Get him. I have to talk to this person. It is very important to me.
Yonk fidgeted with the torch.
This will not be easy. I have already saved your life. Why should I do this also?
I can't explain. But if you do it, I will owe you a great deal.
Really? How much in trade goods?
Go get the old man, you little wretch! Sarbo's deep voice demanded from the open door. And hurry up about it, or I'll crush your head as if it were an overripe melon.
Yonk squeezed past him and ran down the alley.
Did you hear everything? Mark asked.
Almost. Sarbo stepped inside. It seems that you have become a wanted man.
They had me confused with someone else.
Of course. I forgot for a moment how much like everyone else you look. I'm sure it is just a big mistake.
I guess you have a point there. But what else could it be? Up until a few days ago, no one here even knew I existed.
Someone did.
The Murkan heard about you, and when he found out, he made a special trip across many miles just to meet you.
Mark was quiet, thinking. The Murkan had told him there was a shaman here. Why would he lie?
There is something not right about this, Gakon. I said I will help you in your quest, and I will. But we are at a disadvantage. First, we must find out who our enemies are and know all that is going on.
There was a noise at the door. Yonk led in the old beggar they had seen asking for food on the street the day before.
This is the man, masters. He is called Pet. Talk to him if you can.
Mark helped a feeble old man find a place to sit.
We need light, Yonk. I want to see who I'm talking to.
Yonk hit two small rocks together and relit the oiled rag on the end of his torch. Mark knelt beside the man and looked into his face. It was wrinkled and caked with dirt, and his matted hair hung down over his eyes.
I need to ask you some questions, Pet. Do you understand me?
There was no response.
Mark continued.
They say you know about the before time.
Can you tell me about it?
I know much about the before time,
Pet squeaked in a dry, raspy voice.
But you do not really care. You are one of the carriers of the long death. You have the look.
The look? Mark asked quietly. What can you tell me about my looks?
Pet stared straight ahead.
I am the last of the keepers. When I die, it will all be lost.
What will be lost, Pet? What do you keep?
The knowledge. The ancients entrusted it to my family. We have always been keepers.
Do you know about a light, Pet? A great light that can take you to a different time.
The man covered his head with his arms and rocked back and forth.
So much waste and destruction. Many suffered through the long death. So many died that the bodies were piled up, and there was no one left to sing the songs. When the blood sick came to this land, it spread like a fire. No one was safe.
He stopped rocking.
It could still be out there. Be careful.
Yonk shook his head. I told you he was crazy. You will find out nothing from him. I'd better take him back now.
Wait.
Mark put his hand on the old man's shoulder.
This is important, Pet. What do you know about a powerful light that appears in the jungle?
The people did not know how to grow food or defend themselves. Only handfuls survived, and they were changed. Everything was changed in the Bloodsick. He is rambling, Kakon.
Sarbo glanced out the door.
It will be morning soon. We must go.
Frustrated, Mark looked back at Pet. I know you are trying to tell me what happened in Transal to make everything different from my time. But I don't understand all that. All I want to know about is the light. Can you tell me anything about the light? The old man stared at the torch without blinking.
It is no use, Kakon.
Sarbo helped the old man to his feet.
Take him back to his house, Yonk, and...
He grabbed the boy's arm.
Do not go back to the short man tonight. It could prove to be dangerous.
Sarbo waited until they had gone and turned to Mark.
Come with me. Before this night is over, we will have some answers.
Chapter 41. Sarbo stepped back, took a deep breath, and slammed his body into the door. It splintered, fell off its leather hinges, and crashed, barely missing the sleeping man inside.
What? What's going on?
Short man frantically reached for his sword. Mark kicked it across the room. Sarbo stepped on Short Man's chest, pushing him down as he held the blade of his sword against the man's neck.
Sarbo!
Short Man gulped.
My good friend, what is the meaning of this? That is what we are here to find out, Short Man.
Sarbo stepped down harder.
Light the oil pot, Gakon. The fire doesn't let me see into this deceiver's eyes.
Deceiver?
I would never deceive you, Sarbo. Someone has given you false information.
And there is a reward offered for the capture of my friend. Who was behind it?
I do not know what you're talking about.
Sarbo pressed the blade into Short Man's flesh until he drew blood.
I have no time to waste. It will be daylight soon. If you value your life, tell me before I cut your head off and feed it to that Korwunk on the chain outside.
Short Man closed his eyes.
All right. Someone came here. He said your odd-looking friend was worth a lot to someone very important. Who wants him, and why?
He did not give a name. All I know is that he rode a fine beast, and wore metal armor like the kind tied to your friend's gear.
Mark gave a low whistle.
The Murkon. Or one of his men.
Sarbo looked down at the white-faced man on the floor.
When did he say he would be back?
He did not say. Only that if we wanted the reward, we had to hold him here until they came for him.
I had no idea he was your companion, Sarbo. I just thought I could pick up some easy booty.
Sarbo stepped back.
I will not kill you, Short Man. My friend and I are leaving now. If you know what is good for you, you will stay out of our way. And if the man in armor returns, it would be better for you if you did not tell him we were here.
Of course. Short Man sat up and rubbed his throat.
I could never betray you, Sarbo, you know that. If the reward was large enough, you would betray anyone.
Sarbo sheathed his sword.
But see to it that you do not, or I will return. And next time I promise that you will not be left attached to your head.
There was a sound in the courtyard. Mark blew the light out and moved silently up the steps. Standing in front of him was his silver beast, along with a fat black one and a short hairy animal like the kind the Samatin had been riding.
See how I think ahead, Master?
Yonk said to Mark, pulling the animals closer.
You could use someone like me on your journey.
For what? Sarbo climbed the steps. You would only slow us down.
Yonk appealed to Mark.
Master, you know that if I stay here, Short Man will kill me the minute you are out of sight. Haven't I stood by you from the start?
Mark rubbed his chin thoughtfully.
I can cook, Yonk went on, and I'm good with animals. I will see to your every need. You will not have to lift a finger. It would be a terrible mistake not to take me with you.
Sarbo took the reins of the black beast and jumped on its back. He looked at Mark.
Come, Kakon. Perhaps the Samatin are sleeping.
Mark climbed on his animal and followed Sarbo to the edge of the courtyard. He stopped and looked over his shoulder at Yonk.
If you are coming, you'd better hurry. Nobody's going to wait for you.
Oh, thank you, Master.
Yonk hopped on the small donkey-like animal and trotted after them.
I promise you will not regret this.
Chapter 42.
You are very crafty, Masters.
Yonk's animal jogged through the deep red sand,
easily keeping pace with the larger beasts. "You've outsmarted the Samatin. Of course I knew you would, otherwise I would not have chosen to come with you."
Sarbo gave Mark a sullen glance.
"Does that runt ever shut up?"
"I'm sorry if I have offended you, Master. I was just saying that it has been almost 2 days, and you have managed to successfully elude the Samatin. It is not everyone who could have escaped their watchful eyes so easily."
"That is what worries me."
Sarbo shifted his weight and glanced nervously around.
"It seemed too easy."
"Why would they let us go?" Mark asked. "They wanted us pretty badly the other day."
"Who knows? Perhaps the runt is right. I'm probably worrying for no reason. It will be dark soon. We will camp just over that next dune."
They plodded along in silence. Mark hoped he had made the right decision. He had been the one to choose their destination, Lystra. He felt sure the Murkan had the answers he was looking for, if the man was still alive. If not, there might be someone close to him who knew why he had taken such an interest in Mark. The only way to find out for certain was to go to his stronghold across the river in Lystra and ask questions. Sarbo had refused to consider going back to the village without Mark, and Yonk didn't seem to care which way they went, as long as it was away from Shortman.
"Look, masters, trees!"
Yonk pointed down the sand dune to a stand of short red trees.
"We must be getting close to the end of the death sand. I had almost forgotten what they looked like. Aren't they beautiful? Are we going to camp there? It would be wonderful to have shade."
"If it will help to get you to close your flapping mouth, I would be willing to camp in a patch of thorn spears," Sarbo said.
He kicked his beast and moved out in front of them.
"I get the feeling he does not like me much," Yonk said in a low voice. "Have I done something to offend him? Have I not done everything in my power to please him?"
Mark urged his mount down the dune. "I think Sarbo's happy enough with your work, but from now on you might try doing it with a little less talk." Sarbo had stopped. The trees were still ahead. Mark rode up to him, leaving Yonk behind.
"Is something wrong?"
"It is too still."
Sarbo studied the line of trees.
"I don't like it, Gekkon. We must turn back."
As he tugged on the rein, an arrow whizzed and struck Sarbo in the side. The big man slumped forward, hanging on to his beast's mane.
"Go!"
Sarbo shouted hoarsely. Mark reached for the reins of Sarbo's mount and tried to make a run for it, but a swarm of Samatin charged out of the trees and surrounded them before he had moved more than a few feet. The leader, a filthy man wearing a stained white turban, gave them a grin that exposed his rotted front teeth. His look dared Mark to make a move against them. Mark dropped the reins and slowly put his hands in the air. The Samatin began whooping. For several minutes they pranced around their captives, yelling and occasionally poking at Mark and Sarbo with their spears. Finally they took their captives' weapons and tied Mark's hands behind his back with a thin leather strap. The language they spoke was even choppier than the arrow people's. Mark couldn't understand a word. They led the two beasts behind their hairy animals, obviously very pleased with themselves, chattering and waving their arms. Mark chanced a quick glance up at the sand dune. Yonk was nowhere in sight. The Samatin hadn't bothered to tie Sarbo. He was losing a lot of blood and could barely hang on to his beast. Mark felt helpless.
"Hold on, Sarbo," he whispered. "I'll get us out of this, somehow."
There was no answer. Sweat trickled down Mark's forehead and stung his eyes. This was his fault. He should have insisted that Sarbo return to his village, and he should have gone back to the dark jungle. It had been a mistake to drag his friend into this mess. A few miles later, the Samatin dropped into a sandy canyon that got deeper and deeper. They followed it for almost an hour before they stopped in front of what appeared to be a solid wall of red rock and sand. One by one, they rode to the far side and disappeared around the edge. The man leading Mark's beast got off his animal and clicked a command. The little animal followed the others while he carefully led Mark and the bigger animal around the edge of the narrow opening. Mark was amazed. The shimmering sand gave the illusion that there was no way through the wall.
but once they rounded the opening, there was a long, dark tunnel, just wide enough for a beast to pass. He had to duck to avoid being scraped off by low-hanging rocks. The darkness didn't slow the man leading Mark's mount. He seemed to know the way very well. Just when Mark thought the tunnel would never end, a light appeared, and the little man led him out into a valley. Mark's eyes widened. The ground was black, and the vegetation green. Green, the way he remembered it was supposed to be. As they walked, a powdery dirt swirled up around the man's ankles. Mark looked down and saw that they were walking through old volcanic ash. The Samoten had founded their hidden paradise in the remains of an inactive volcano. The rim of the blackened cone loomed in front of them. Women and children came out of their mud huts to stare at the prisoners. Dog creatures with long, thin tails that dragged on the ground barked and nipped at the heels of the mounts. The leader pointed at Sarbo and shouted. Two of the Samoten roughly pulled him, unconscious, off his beast and carried him into one of the huts. Then the leader gave another order and pointed at Mark. A heavy blow hit Mark in the ribs and he fell, landing on his shoulder in the dirt. The Samoten roared with laughter. Mark struggled to his knees, his hands still tied. Someone kicked him solidly in the back and he fell on his face. He scrambled to his feet and warily watched the crowd to see who his next attacker would be. It was the little man who had led his beast. He jumped at Mark, intending to jab him with his spear. Mark sidestepped, whirled, and landed a kick to the short man's stomach. The crowd stopped laughing. One of their own had been bested by a prisoner. They pressed in closer to see what would happen next. The little man turned, his narrow black eyes flashing. He braced himself, raised the spear, and charged again. Mark was ready. He dropped to the ground and scissored his legs to trip the man. The small fellow was propelled forward into the crowd. The spear flew out of his hand and landed in the dirt near the leader. The leader was not amused. He clapped his hand sharply and his men rushed to grab Mark. They took him to a small cage made of tree limbs and pushed him inside. There was a rope attached to the top. They threw it around a high tree branch and raised the cage off the ground. The prison was not designed for someone as tall as Mark. When he sat flat on the floor, his head touched the top. The cage was so small there was hardly room for him to move. He studied the way it was built. The sturdy sticks were held in place by leather strips, like the one that was cutting into his wrists. He was carrying his old pocket knife in a pouch around his waist, but it was impossible to get to it. The Samoten people had crowded around below the cage and were throwing rocks and spitting and jeering at him. Whatever he did, if anything, would have to wait until nightfall. Chapter 43. The night was warm and bright. The moonlight shone through the haze better here than anywhere else Mark had been in Transaal. The Samoten had finally given up taunting him and gone into their huts to sleep. Wedged in his prison, Mark sat thinking, trying to take his mind off how uncomfortable he was. Back in his world, the sulfur from volcanoes had been used to make many things, particularly explosive powder. He racked his brain, trying to remember the formula. His science teacher had talked about it. Mark had stored the information because he thought he and his friends might find it useful one day for homemade fireworks. The Chinese or somebody had figured out that if you added the sulfur from pure deposits of brimstone to charcoal and potassium nitrate, you could produce a potentially lethal explosion. Mark smiled grimly. It was funny what you could remember in these bizarre situations. He continued to think. The charcoal was easy. It was right there in the residue of old fires the Samoten had let burn down. He suspected the long tunnel they came through had all the potassium nitrate he would need. But what was the formula? There was a disturbance on the other side of the camp. In the moonlight, he could see a Samoten guard on a mount, dragging someone behind him. It was Yonk.
The man picked up the boy and stuffed him into another cage. Then he raised it off the ground near Mark's.
I tried to save your master, honestly, I did. I would have done it, too, if it had not been for the tunnel guard. He is a coward and a thief. He came at me from behind and took my donkey and my pack. When I get out of here, I'll rip him apart. I will...
Yonk?
Yes, master.
Thank you for coming after us. It's good to see you. But if you don't mind, I'm trying to think right now.
Are you about to come up with a grand plan to escape from these barbaric people along with Master Sarbo? Where is Master Sarbo? If you do have a plan, I can be of great help to you. In fact, I once...
Yonk?
Yes, master.
Shut up.
Yes, master.
Mark pulled his knees up under his chin. He inched onto his back and pushed upward with his feet. The round wooden bars didn't budge. Next, he tried bracing his back against one side of the cage and his feet against the other. He pushed again with all his might, but nothing happened.
This is hopeless, he muttered.
He looked up at the sky. The faint outline of a star shone through the haze. He hadn't seen a star since the night he had discovered the blue light more than 3 years ago. And for the first time in months, he felt a twinge of homesickness.
Yonk, you asked me not to talk, master.
Forget about that. Are your hands tied in the front or back?
They're tied in the front, master. That is how that Samoton coward was able to drag me along behind his mount. And you know, I think he enjoyed it, too. I heard him laughing.
Listen to me. I'm going to tell you how the latch on your cage works. Put your hands through the bars and feel for a round wooden wheel.
I have it, master.
Turn the wheel to your left.
I'm trying it. Will not turn. Something is holding it.
Feel for a wooden peg in the face of the wheel. Pull it straight out.
It still will not move, master.
Rock the wheel back and forth. And pull harder, Yonk. Sarbo and I are counting on you. Mark heard the cage gate snap open.
Good work, Yonk. Now jump down and lower my cage.
Master, I'm not very good with heights. What if I break my leg, or worse, what if I fall on my...
Jump!
Yes, master.
Mark heard him hit the ground with a thud.
Are you all right?
Yes, although I'm not sure that you really care how I am, considering that I told you I did not like heights, and...
Find the rope that holds my cage. When you do, let it out slowly.
I found it, master, Yonk whispered. But it is difficult to undo with my hands tied together.
Mark's cage lurched downward. He closed his eyes and prepared for the crash. It didn't come. The cage jerked to a stop. Mark opened his eyes to find himself suspended a few inches above the ground.
Good work, Yonk. Now open my cage.
Yonk?
I am up here, master.
Mark looked up. High in the tree, dangling from the end of the rope, was Yonk. He was holding on with both hands.
Get down here, Yonk, I need you.
But, master, it is a very long way to fall, even farther than the last time.
Yonk, if you don't get down here and unlock my cage, someone will find us like this. And I hear the Samoton enjoy cooked sook. They say the younger the victim and the more tender the meat.
There was another thud. This time it was accompanied by a soft groan.
Do not worry, master, I am fine.
Yonk's face appeared in front of Mark's cage. The boy turned the wheel and pulled out the peg, and the door sprang open.
Reach in my pouch, Yonk, and find my small knife. Cut me loose, and I will do the same for you.
Yonk found the knife and sawed at the strap until Mark was able to break it.
See, master, did I not tell you that you would find me very useful?
You told me. Now quit talking and get your hands over here.
Chapter 44.
But, master, does it not make more sense to steal back our animals and escape while we still have a chance? You raised our cages back into the tree. They will not discover we are gone for quite some time.
Hand me that bowl of dirt, Yonk.
That is exactly what I was saying, master. Here you are, hiding behind bushes, sifting through dirt and grinding charred sticks to powder, when we could be halfway to Lystra by now. It was a very risky thing for you to send me back to the tunnel. I was very lucky the guard was away. And why did you have me do it? To escape?
No, to collect dirt. I'm sure there will be plenty of dirt in Lystra, Master. I'll help you get all you want. Why do we not go?
I will not leave Sarbo. This may be the only way for the Samoton to know I mean business. Hand me that other bowl and spread that rag out beside it.
Yonk did what he was told, then sighed and sat down beside Mark. Master, when they come for us, will you do me a favor?
Mark didn't answer. He continued working, frantically trying to remember how many parts of each ingredient were necessary.
I would like for you to end my life quickly before they get a chance to cook me. I do not think it would be at all pleasant to be boiled.
Clean out my pouch, Yonk. You are in charge of keeping track of my things. For now I need to store some of the powder in it. I'll keep the rest folded inside this cloth.
Carefully, Mark scooped up what he hoped was close to the recipe for the explosive powder and filled his pouch. Then he stood up.
Come, Yonk. The show's about to begin.
It was early morning. The two crept around the rim of the old volcano close to the village.
There was quiet. Nothing moved.
Mark motioned for Yonk to go for the mounts, and then made his way to the hut where the Samoton had taken Sarbo. There was no guard. Apparently, they thought Sarbo was too badly wounded to be a threat.
Mark ducked inside. Sarbo, are you here?
Of course I'm here, infant. What took you so long?
Mark smiled. Sarbo was lying perfectly still on the floor.
Can you walk?
I think so. Help me up.
Leaning on Mark, Sarbo took a wobbly step.
We must hurry. It will be full daylight soon, and they will be looking for us, Mark said.
He half-carried Sarbo out the door and across the grounds to the edge of the village, where Yonk was waiting with the beasts and his mount.
Hello, Master Sarbo. See, you were wrong about me. I have been of great help to you. Look, I found Master Kakon's weapons, and have even stolen this extra sword and crossbow. First, I...
Not now, Yonk.
Mark pushed past him. Help me get him on his mount.
Sarbo was so weak he nearly fell.
Hold him on, Yonk.
Mark took the reins and led the animals back toward the tunnel. A guard was pacing back and forth in front of the opening.
Mark whispered to Yonk, I'm going to create a diversion. When the guard leaves his post, take Sarbo and the beasts and hurry through the tunnel. I will join you as soon as I can. If I don't come, go on without me. I entrust Sarbo to your care.
Before Yonk could ask any questions, Mark slipped away into the darkness.
In minutes, a loud explosion ripped the night apart, and the guard ran to investigate. Yonk, Sarbo, and the beasts disappeared into the tunnel.
The Samoton village sprang to life. Mark crawled to his feet and brushed at his singed eyebrows. His mixture had been more potent than he'd expected. He had poured only a small amount on the ground and tossed a burning stick into it, hoping the sparks would attract the guard's attention. At first, nothing had happened. Then it had suddenly caught fire. The force of the explosion was so great it had blown him backward. Mark ran to the tunnel. He tripped and fell on the slippery rocks as he made his way through the darkness. There was shouting and the sound of running feet behind him. The Samoton were in the tunnel too, and they were coming fast. Mark could see light ahead. Hurriedly, he dumped out the contents of the rag, then struck his fire rocks together and lit the end of a dry stick he was carrying in his belt. He stepped back and tossed the stick, then turned and leaped into a run. The explosion was deafening. The walls of the tunnel crumbled. Rock fragments flew everywhere. The blast blew white smoke out of the tunnel and Mark along with it. When he landed, he could hear the screams of the men back in the tunnel.
Master, we are here!
Yonk led the beast up to him.
Sarbo raised his head.
Well done, Kakon. Well done.
Chapter 45.
Are you sure about this, Sarbo?
Mark looked down at his friend. He was lying behind his mount on a pole stretcher they had hastily put together.
Sarbo smiled weakly. His face had lost most of its color.
I am sure, Kakon. I am going back to our village to die. The runt will take me. I will have a fine warrior's burial, and they will sing many songs about my bravery.
You are too mean and ornery to die, Sarbo. But I do think that the village is the best place for you. They will tend your wound, and soon you will be back to your old annoying self.
Annoying? Why, if I was not about to die, I would...
I know. Mark knelt by the stretcher. You would teach me to respect my betters.
Here.
He took off his claw necklace and put it around Sarbo's neck. I want you to have this. You have been a true friend, Sarbo. No one could ask for better.
Mark stood and turned to Yonk.
Take good care of him. Follow the directions I have given you. If you get him safely back to the village, you will be given your freedom.
I will do as you ask, Master. You can count on me.
I know I can. And Yonk, if you should meet a girl by the name of Megan in the village,
tell her...
Yes, Master?
Never mind. You'd better get going.
And be careful. There could be other tribes out there. Mark watched them go until they were only tiny specks on the horizon. He already missed them. His trip to Lystra was going to be a lonely one. Sarbo had given him directions to the ferry that would take him across the great river. After that, it was only a few more miles to the Murkan stronghold. He would have liked to have the assurance of Sarbo's sword and his vast fighting experience. But even more than that, Sarbo's friendship. Even Yonk's unending chatter would be better than silence. Mark shrugged the feeling off and sat up straight on his mount. He had been alone before and had survived. The red death sand gradually faded into a soft red dust that grew mostly cactus. Mark let his animal pick its way through the thorny plants. Sarbo had told him there would be no water here, but if he cut the tops off the larger cactus plants, he could find a bitter liquid that would see him through until he reached the river. Mark stopped only twice to drink. He didn't eat because he was in a hurry and didn't want to take the time to hunt. His mount's flanks were drawing up from exertion and the lack of water. The animal's steps became slower and slower. Finally, Mark got off and led the beast until nightfall. The moonlight gave the night sky an odd yellow glow. Mark stopped to rest. Soon he would continue, hoping to reach the river by morning. He tied the beast and snuggled down in the warm, soft dirt. His mind replayed the events of the previous weeks. The Murkan had told him of a shaman in Trasad, who did not exist. Then they had been attacked on the way to find the imaginary shaman, and the Murkan had been taken captive. Bounty hunters had been offered a reward for Mark's capture. Why? None of it made any sense. He thought back to Pet, the old man in Trasad, who said he was a keeper of knowledge. The stories he had told about the bloodsick and the terrible destruction made Mark shudder. The people had been changed by some catastrophe. They were strange in custom and appearance. Well, not all of them. Mark drifted off to sleep thinking about how pretty one of them was, especially when she was upset with him. When he was finished in Lystra, he would go back and see her one last time before he returned to the dark jungle.
Chapter 46. The big animal lapped up river water for a long time. Mark was worried about letting it have so much. He had read something about over-drinking making animals sick. He ran his hand back and forth in the cool brown water, watching the animal.
"Well, what have we here?"
Mark whirled. A stocky young man with an ugly burn on his face stood behind him, holding a wooden oar.
"Are you not something? Coming here in broad daylight like this? Either you are very brave, or you are touched in the head."
Mark jumped to his feet.
"I don't know who you think I am, but I have no doubt who you are. You are the young outlaw with a very large price on his head. The word is that you are a bad one indeed. What did you do to get him after you? Normally he does not take such an interest."
"I don't have a clue what you're talking about. I'm simply looking for the fairy.
You wouldn't happen to know if it's up or downstream, would you?
You are touched. Do you not realize that everyone in the area has been alerted to look for you? You would be spotted instantly if you tried to cross the river on the ferry. The Murkon has spies everywhere.
The Murkon? Mark tried to think. So it was true. The Murkon had offered a reward for his capture. He put his hand on the hilt of his sword. Are you here to try to collect the bounty? The young man gave a wry laugh.
If I was, I could easily have struck you on the head with my oar.
Put away your sword, outlaw. I am no friend of the Murkon. It was one of his men who did this to me. He pointed at the burn on his cheek. Mark relaxed.
Do you know of another way across the river?
Maybe, but first you must tell me why you wish to go into the demon's lair. The reward for you holds whether you are dead or alive.
What is so significant over there that you would risk your life for it?
Answers. I'm not an outlaw. The Murkon knows I'm not. He also has information about something that is very important to me. If he is still alive, I have to have it.
No. He is alive, all right. He just recently returned from a very long trip, and he wasted no time getting the word out about you.
The young man rubbed his chin.
I have a raft. Your beast will have to swim, but I know of a narrow place in the river. Come with me.
Mark hesitated, then grabbed his mount's reins.
He wasn't sure whether he could trust this man, but it looked as if he had no choice.
The young man looked back.
What do they call you, outlaw?
Some call me Cacon.
Interesting name. What does it mean?
I'm told it means the second warrior.
Where are you from?
A faraway place.
Close-mouthed, I like that. A man can never be too careful. My name is Roan. I live across a river with a small group of murderers and thieves.
Mark stopped. Is that where we're going?
Yes. They are an unruly bunch, but once they find out who you are, they will be pleased that you've joined us. Here is a raft. Give me a hand, will you?
Mark helped him push the raft into the water.
Why do you live with murderers and thieves? You don't seem like the type. When the great Murkon puts a mark like this on your face, you are no longer welcome among the true people.
Why did he do that to you?
I used to work for him in the stronghold. I tended the stables as a young boy and worked my way up to become a member of the elite guard. Life could not have been better for me until I met Danza.
Danza?
The Murkon's daughter. We were going to run away together. But we were caught by her brother, Mordo. The Murkon branded me as a thief. He would have branded her, too, but she denied everything and blamed me.
Roan shrugged.
I guess it wasn't true love after all. Now I am banished from Lystra. So I hide with my companions in the forest and live by my wits. You are welcome to stay with us.
Thank you, Roan. Mark stepped onto the raft and pulled his beast to the edge of the water.
I just might take you up on that.
Roan pushed off and began rowing. The beast followed and was soon covered with water except for its head. Roan let the current take them downstream a short distance and then started rowing again until they reached the other side. A wide man with a flat face, scraggly hair, and thick bare feet jumped out of the bushes and caught the rope Roan threw to him. He pulled the raft ashore and helped them hide it in the brush.
This is Frankel. At one time he was the Murkon's chief advisor. That was before he advised something the Murkon did not want to hear, and his tongue was cut out.
Mark winced and nodded at the man.
Nice to meet you.
Frankel nodded back and reached for the reins of Mark's beast. Mark jerked them away.
I'll keep it with me if you don't mind.
The man frowned and moved up the trail in front of them. Roan winked at Mark.
Wise decision. Frankel has been known to borrow a mount from time to time. He sells them to an old trader across a river.
So you steal from each other, too?
Oh, no, only from strangers.
It's nice to know you draw the line somewhere.
Roan laughed and led the way up a narrow path through stands of tall red trees.
So, you claim you are not really an outlaw. You must have done something. What was it? Did you hear or see something you were not supposed to? Perhaps you failed to carry out a mission you were entrusted with. It was none of those things. At least I don't think it was. I'm not really sure. To tell you the truth, I think it has something to do with the way I look.
Ha! Roan slapped his leg.
That is very funny. The Great Murkon wants to arrest you because of your looks.
Roan stopped walking and turned to study Mark.
I admit you do look odd. You are very tall, your skin has a pasty look, and your eyes are misshapen.
He snapped his fingers.
I have it. You are related to the Murkon. I saw him once without his mask. He had those same strange eyes.
This time it was Mark's turn to laugh.
That's not it either. I can't explain right now, but believe me, there's no way I would be related to the Murkon.
Too bad. Would have made a good story to tell at the fire tonight.
Roan stepped through a hedge of brush. We will not speak from this point on, Kakon. For the next mile or so, the forest is inhabited by the worst kind of beasts. Spies sent from the Murkon to locate our band. Walk only where I walk.
Mark watched Roan slip a knife from his moccasin. He followed suit by reaching for his crossbow and loading one of his arrows. They had traveled a fair distance when they heard a loud snap and strange whirring noise. Then came the sound of someone crashing through the brush in their direction. Mark wanted to hide, but Roan stood his ground, poised and ready. Frankel charged out of the brush, motioning excitedly for them to follow him. A sly grin crept over Roan's face.
Come, Kakon, he whispered. I think you will enjoy this.
Frankel led the way to a clearing and pointed above their heads. Hanging by one foot and trying desperately to free himself from the noose around his foot was one of the Murkon soldiers. His helmet and sword had fallen to the ground, and the skirt of skins he wore dropped over his head, exposing his bare backside.
"Looks as if one of your traps has caught a varmint, Frankel. Rather large one this time. Take care of it, and see if you can find his mount."
Roan took a step and stopped.
"And Frankel, be sure the mount gets back to camp."
"Come, Kakon. Our camp is not far now."
Roan led the way through a dense thicket.
On the other side he stopped and called out,
"Ho, the camp! It is I, Roan, with the distinguished guest."
A voice in the trees answered,
"Proceed, and welcome to Roan and his guest."
Mark scanned the treetops, but couldn't find the owner of the voice. He followed Roan down a narrow ravine, which opened to a small clearing. There were no people, but a nearly smokeless fire burned in the center, and a small animal was cooking on a wooden spit. Armor and swords were stacked up on one side, and a string of beasts was tied to a long rope. One by one, six men stepped out from behind trees and stood in front of them.
"Is this who I think it is?"
A man with a scar burned into his face like Roan's looked Mark up and down.
"It is Jod."
Roan held out his hand.
"My friends, may I present the young outlaw Kakon. I found him on the other side of the river, looking for the ferry."
"The ferry?" A thin man with a shaved head moved close to Mark.
"He is a bold rascal. What did he intend to do? Take on the company of guards on the bank by himself?"
"That I do not know. All he has told me is that he desires to see the Great Murkon on a personal matter."
Jod circled behind them. Mark's hand felt for the release on his crossbow.
Roan touched Mark's shoulder.
"Have no fear, my pale new friend," he glared at Jod. "You know better. Kakon is my guest. I told him he would be welcome here. Bring him food and water. Perhaps before this day is over, we will all find out how useful we can be to one another."
Chapter 47. The stronghold is on the other side of Lystra. It has a high wall that completely encircles it. Inside, there's a shelter room for the guards to sleep in and a stable that houses 100 riding beasts. The main house is like nothing you have ever seen.
It has a large hall with a plank floor, and behind that more than 10 rooms used solely by the Murkan and his family. Mark didn't comment. He waited for Roan to finish. The tribute is kept in one of the back rooms. I've never seen it, but one time Danza told me about it. She described it in detail, so I know for certain it is there.
And you want me to help you break into the stronghold to get it?
Yes. We have 8 good men. You make 9. If we attack at night, we will have the element of surprise. And if while you are there you get a chance to handle your business with the Murkan, so much the better. What do you say?
I say no.
Jod pulled out his sword.
He's a coward, Roan. Let me cut his heart out.
Let me finish. Mark stood and brushed the crumbs from his clothes. By the way, thank you for the meal. I haven't eaten in a long time. It is very much appreciated. Roan raised an eyebrow.
You were saying?
Just that I think there is a better way. If the stronghold is guarded as heavily as you say, I don't think you're going to have an easy time sneaking over the wall.
Go on.
Well, suppose they open the gate for you. Suppose you brought them something the Murkan wants. Not only would you be taken to the tribute room for payment, you would get in without a fight.
And that something would be...
me.
Chapter 48. It was dark. Mark rode in front of a column of 8 armored men. His hands were loosely tied in front of him, and he wore a long cloak of skins to cover his sword.
"Open the gate," Roan shouted. "We have a prisoner for the Murkan."
A small iron peephole scraped open. A deep voice called out,
"Identify yourselves and the prisoner."
Roan adjusted the helmet to make sure it covered his face. He had been a member of the guard long enough to know what to say.
"I am Vagra, with the Desert Company. The prisoner is the odd-looking outlaw the Murkan has been searching for. I am here for the reward."
"Wait."
The iron peephole slid shut. In a few minutes the heavy gate creaked open and the column rode inside. Mark glanced around. Most of the Murkan's men were in the sleeping shelter, but the night guards were on duty, and they were stationed every few feet all the way around the wall. A gate guard took Mark's beast.
"So, you are the one we have been searching for. Get down. The Murkan wishes to see you immediately."
He turned to Roan.
"Follow me, Vagra. The Murkan will see that you are well rewarded."
Roan got off his mount and stood between Mark and the guard.
"This is my prisoner, and I will be the one to deliver him."
He reached up and pulled Mark off his beast. Then he turned to his men. "Frankel, take care of the animals. The rest of you dismount and give me a hand. This one is bad, extremely violent and tricky. I do not want him escaping now that we are finally here." The guard's eyes narrowed. He stiffened but turned, leading the way up the wooden steps into the main house. Mark was surprised to see how well furnished the great hall was. There were colorful rugs on the floor and benches with cushions. Large murals were painted on the walls, and at one end sat a tall, ornately carved chair with a high wooden back.
"So, what do you think, Kakon?"
Mark turned. The Murkan and 2 of his men had entered the room from a side door.
"Of what? The chair? The room? Or the way I was brought in here like a dog for crimes I never committed?"
"Still not afraid of me, are you? We'll change that in due time. I'm really glad they brought you in alive. I was hoping they would. I wanted to talk to you."
"I'm listening."
"Unfortunately, so are others."
The Murkan waved his hand.
"Guard, take these men and give them a fitting reward. See to it that no one comes in or out of this room until I call."
The guard led Roan and his men out the side door and closed it behind them. The Murkan walked to the tall chair and sat down.
"Now, let's see. Where should I begin?"
"Try telling me why you're so interested in me. And what do you know about the light that brought me here?"
The Murkan sat back.
"You are a smart boy. I would have thought you'd have had it all figured out by now.
The only thing I've figured out is that somehow I'm a threat to you, and that you've gone to a whole lot of trouble to get me out of the way. You even ambushed your own